All around the world and throughout time, play has been a universal and constant feature of childhood. Leading educators, researchers, and pediatricians all to agree that play is essential to how children learn. Through play, children develop social and emotional skills, acquire the building blocks of literacy, mathematics, and scientific investigation, as well as enhance attention span and focus and cultivate curiosity and creativity. Even with all these benefits, though, play is an increasingly endangered experience for many of the world's children. Recess, art, phys ed, and free play have been pushed aside in favor of more formal academic instruction and standardized tests. It is a problem addressed in the new book, Let the Children Play: How More People Will Save Our Schools and Help Children Thrive. The book is by Posse Selberg and William Doyle. And it's a great pleasure to welcome William Doyle to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's great to be with you, Joe. Thank you.
What brought you and your co-author to want to address this topic?
Well, my partner, who is from Finland, the great educator from Finland, and I switched countries several years ago. He came to Harvard to teach. I went to Finland as a Fulbright scholar to examine their world-famous primary school education system, and I had a seven-year-old son at the time, and I thought, well, this would be interesting to get his perspective, too. So I became a public school dad in Finland, and I was fascinated by the idea of doing largely the opposite of what we're doing in the United States and achieving excellent results, which is what Finland does.
So in a nutshell, what do you believe that we are doing in the United States that is hurtful to children?
Number one, we have demolished play, which is the learning language of children from elementary and middle and high schools. And that is something we need to restore as a pillar of our system. And this is not just Posse Selberg and William Doyle speaking. This is the American Academy of Pediatrics, for example, which has issued major reports in the last couple of years, urgently recommending more recess, more periods of free time, and intellectual and physical play for children. The reason is it makes learning more efficient, and it has a host of benefits, social-emotional learning, physical development, cognitive development. All of them are helped by regular periods of play, which happens in Finland. It happens in Japan, for example, where I was a public school father for a period earlier this year, where children typically get about 60, 65 minutes of outdoor play and breaks during the day. We have largely removed that in the United States, and it's terribly inefficient for children, and it makes them unhappy, too. The second thing we've done is we have made standardized tests the governing mechanism of the American childhood education system. And that has warped and hijacked with test prep and wasted time and money our entire system. And it hasn't worked for 20 years. We have not improved learning or our international rankings or achievement gaps to any major extent. The reason we do this, I have done this for 20 years, is to try to move the needle on those metrics. Right. And it hasn't worked, so it's time for something new.
So is there something more devious there, though? I mean, is that the reason we got to where we are? Or I mean, you do have to wonder of that play was such a part of a child's life and it has been removed. Is it just that it has been neglected? Or do you think there's something more sinister at work?
It's been pushed out by this long progression of so-called increased rigor, increased standards, forcing children to master academics at younger and younger ages, which is supported by no research, by the way. And somehow in America, Joe, I think we've forgotten, I think everybody loves children, obviously, around the world. But somehow we in America have forgotten childhood as the whole a foundation of learning. And I think that the childhood itself is something we should protect and cherish rather than forcing children to become little computers and little adults, because that's not a very efficient or loving way to educate a child. And I especially call our attention to people, to children in poverty and troubled circumstances. According to pediatricians, they're the ones who deserve periods of play and recess and periods of freedom in school, even as more or as much as middle-income and wealthy children.
So let us begin by what you think needs to be done in changing this, in bringing play back, and ultimately what will become as a result of that.
Well, one thing we should do is we should consider giving children 60 minutes of recess per day rather than the average 15 or 20 minutes they get now, if they're lucky. And many American children are now having recess taken away from them as a weapon to get better behavior, when actually more recess gives them better behavior. Now, the science tells us that children are more focused, more on task, and better able to perform when they have regular breaks through the day. And what's fascinating is that right now in American schools in South Carolina, Long Island, New York, Texas, and Oklahoma, this is being experimented with, and the results are terrific. That's inspired directly by the lessons of Finland. The second thing we should do is we should go back to having teachers grade children as the governing assessment, or the main assessment of school, rather than mass, compulsory, expensive, stressful standardized tests, which is a regime that has really not worked and is unnecessary because we have teachers. That's what teachers are for.
It seems in reading this book, there's a lot of blame to go around, right? I mean, the educational system and even parents themselves.
Well, we're careful not to judge anybody's parenting styles. What we're trying to do is to bring to parents' attention and policymakers the tremendous research that indicates that play, and that means intellectual and physical, indoors and outdoors, in school and at home and in the community, play is the learning language of children. It's the most efficient vehicle for children to learn from, and it gives them physical benefits, cognitive benefits, social, emotional benefits as well, and that we have taken it away from them for some reason. We've forgotten it. We have to bring it back, and if we do, our children will be happier. They'll want to go to school more. Do you know what one of the, in Finland, one of the purposes of school is school should be a child's favorite place. They shouldn't want to leave at the end of the day. And it can be done. That's actually possible if we make it one of our mantras and the way maybe principals are judged. Maybe we should judge teachers and principals not only on rather imperfect standardized test data, but on the amount of play they give to children and physical activity, in addition to all the other important things. But we're missing this, and it's a terrible problem for children's mental health, which is becoming very problematic these days, because one reason is that we've taken play away from them at home and at school, and it doesn't have to be this way.
So let me ask this question. Is this trend for kids to be heavily involved in sports and travel teams and taking a very aggressive schedule and having practice every night and then going on the road for the weekends, is that play, or is that putting more pressure on the kids in much the same way that you just described?
Well, it's when there is compulsion and penalty attached to things, and when children are too young for organized sports, when this is foisted on children as their only way of playing, I think we're missing the benefits of free play, of children organizing themselves. I was just in China not long ago. There's a new preschool kindergarten model in China, which is the opposite of everything you could think of with Chinese early education. Half the day, and this is a very popular cutting-edge system, by the way, half the day is outdoor play, construction, loose parts, jumping, falling down, skinning your knee, building structures together with your little friends. Then you go indoors, you relax, and you write stories about what you just learned and did. So, and teachers are ordered to stay on the sidelines, unless a child is in danger. I think parents can learn from that, too. The more we hold back, the less we're involved sometimes, the better a child will learn and the better a child will enjoy themselves, if it's the playground or a pickup sports game. Nothing wrong with organized sports, but I think we need much more of a balance at home and in school, because there are real benefits to free play where children help each other. They fail, they make mistakes. Occasionally, they might feel sad or excluded, but that's all, or fall down and skin their knee. But that's all part of childhood. And the more we protect them from that, the more we may be taking away from them in the end.
You talk about policymakers. What policy do you think we should be working on? What should policymakers be looking at right now?
Policymakers should be informed by evidence. And according to the American Academy of Pediatrics, the National Institute of Medicine, the Centers for Disease Control, and a consensus of global childhood educators, we must give play to children in school, as children up to high school. We must give them much more physical activity, and we must not penalize them for wiggling, wanting to go outside, making mistakes. I think we should have failure academies, not just success academies. We should have failure academies where children feel free to make mistakes and fail again as a pathway to success. I think schools should be celebrating failure. Did you know that in Finland there's a national day of failure where failure is showcased, celebrated, and seen as a normal part of success. In our system in America, we have geared everything toward perfection and test-driven data, and that is not the right way to educate children. From a policy perspective, we should return to a evidence-based or evidence-informed whole-child approach that tailors instruction to every child, where they're not compared against each other, but they're assessed for learning rather than of what they're learning. They should be assessed versus their own growth and their own potential. Some children learn how to read at 4 years old beautifully. Some don't learn until they're 7 and a half, and we should adjust for that and accommodate that in our school system. That may be easier said than done, but our teachers are capable of miracles, I think, when we take the shackles of standardized testing off of them and let them be professionals. That's another component. We need to fund our schools fairly and equitably, and we need to treat teachers like elite professionals. We need to select, train, and respect them as elite professionals. It is a clinical profession requiring a lot of training and a lot of respect on the part of the public, and I think that the pendulum may be swinging toward that a bit in America now, and I think that's a very good thing, but we've got a long way to go.
The name of the book is Let the Children Play, How More Play Will Save Our Schools and Help Children Thrive. The book is published by Oxford. William Doyle, thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you, Joe. Great to be with you.
Great to have you with us. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Let the Children Play. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.